Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. Again, go to the website, TotalTutor.net, to find out more information. Well, just keep the celebrities coming, and I really am excited, and I want to thank, again, always working with these fantastic publicists. And when I got a text message last week after it was the craziest week, third year anniversary of radio, and I found out I was going to have this guy on the show, I was just blown away. I said, oh, wow. And when I told my wife, she said, oh, my gosh, he's the good-looking one on this show. So I want to welcome the program from Extreme Makeover Home Edition, John Littlefield. John, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
So you have to see.
I'm excited.
You have to tell people that that's what my wife said. You're the good looking one on the show. So
that's what my mother says too.
Yeah. All right. So let's kind of go right specifically how you ended up there, because we all have stories. I mean,
good. Well, it's 9/11. That's how it happened. I'm from Pennsylvania. I went to Temple University for graduate school in Philly. And I'm trained as an actor. And then I did the whole New York thing, and I was on Off-Broadway, and I did a lot of movies and TV. And then I got a soap opera, so I was on a soap opera for years. But I paid my way through college, and then I went to a conservatory for a theater, and then graduate school, all swinging a hammer, you know, building sets and building houses,
right,
and repairing apartments and just doing stuff like that. Because it's stuff my dad taught me, because my parents wanted to, you know, dabbled in real estate, and they were too cheap to hire anybody, so they hired me. And so I had to learn all that stuff, which was an invaluable lesson, really. Especially as an actor, because you always have to have a contingency plan. So I was doing very well. I was on a soap opera, and then after the soap, because the soap canceled, I did a play. I was in New York. I was doing an off-Broadway play. And my agent told me in New York, he said, I want you to go to L.A. And I thought, I really don't want to go to L.A. And I don't know how to really drive, you know, and things. So I'm like, I gotta drive a car. There's no public transportation there. There's no subways. I don't want to go there. Why? You know? And, you know, the people are weird, and I just don't want to go. But he's like, okay, but you're going to go anyway. And my girlfriend at the time, is now my wife, she was already out here. So I was like, oh, okay, well, she's out here anyway. And so that was August of 2001. And then 30 days later, the most horrid day in America happened, and that was September 11th.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden, New York shuts down. The whole city shuts down. And all the actors that in New York, they just moved to Los Angeles. It was like the Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, wow.
And so my agent, they released all New York talent. Like on this phone call. They're like, yeah, we're no longer representing you. I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, now we're releasing all New York talent. I'm like, well, I was here before. what are you talking about? Well, I see you. You're off. I'm like, okay. So what did I do? I suddenly have an agent. I didn't know anybody in this town. I'm lost. And so what I did was I just started painting houses. I needed to keep the lights on.
Yes.
And I was able to still keep, I lost my theatrical agent, but I was able to keep my commercial agent. And then at that time, my commercial agent also was starting a hosting department within the agency. And so they were using their talent that was already in their stable. And so I was, you know, the agent who was starting the hosting department wanted me to be a host. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know anything about hosting. What are you talking about? He's like, no, you just talk. I'm like, yeah, okay, easier for you to say. And so, and then I'm painting houses, and it just so happened I painted the right house. I painted one of the producers of the Discovery Channel stuff. And he was like, you need your own show. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever you say, Tom. you're my agent. And he's like, no, seriously, you'd be a wonderful host. I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever you say. Well, about 2 months later, I'm hosting a show on the Discovery Channel. And who knew? I was pretty good at it. So once you're at the Discovery Channel, you're like an indentured servant. Even if that show that you are on is canceled or whatever, you're still under contract for other shows at the Discovery Channel, which is wonderful. I love the Discovery Channel for that one of the many reasons, but for that reason as well. And so I did I did the Dude Room, and then I did Top Gear, and then I did Home Blitz, and then I did, gosh, I did so many pilots, I can't even remember. And then my contract was up in about 6 months, and beautiful and talented, and God rest her soul, Denise Cramsey, from Allentown, PA, Denise Cramsey was the executive producer of Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And she kind of made a deal with Discovery Channel like a baseball player, and I kind of was traded. And then I found myself in everyone's living room, end of season three of Extreme Makeover Home Edition. I've done 7 seasons. We're on our 10th season now. But it was funny because I was still able to continue my love of acting. So, while I was doing Extreme Makeover, I did 3 Anthony Hopkins movies. I did Beowulf, I did Fracture, I did Slipstream. I was able to do Desperate Housewives, Dexter, Castle.
Wow.
I've just been, just hustling. And I also, I do a lot of voiceover work. So I'm also the voice of Sears. I do all the campaigns for Sears. Which I'm very blessed to do that because they're a wonderful sponsor of Extreme Makeover Home Edition. I'm a narrator for the Discovery Channel, I'm a busy guy.
Well, you sound very busy, but I guess, again, look at it. You're painting someone's house. So that teaches somebody, when you live in L.A., if you just try to kind of connect with the right people doing any type of job, if you're a talent, you're going to get picked up. So that was the right place, right time, wasn't it?
Right place, right time. And, but also, though, and it's funny because even when I'm on Extreme Makeover Home Edition, and they're very, very good to us, but in between seasons, I get bored, and I'm painting houses, and people are like, hey, aren't you that guy? I'm like, yeah, I'm that guy. And they're like, you actually do this? I'm like, yeah, I do. I like keeping the lights on, and I like staying busy, and I like working. I've been working since I did the math the other day. I've been working since I was 9 years old. I had a paper route when I was 9.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I've been hustling for a long time.
So what I wouldn't
have it any other way. What's that?
What I said, what I find so cool about this is, again, the stories of how celebrities make it. I mean, where you get your big break, and especially on this Total Education Celebrity Show, what we try to do is educate people on how celebrities, either they have a foundation or something, how they make it. And what a strange story. I wouldn't have expected that story. I just expect, yeah. I was in the right place, and I tried out for it, and they said, you're perfect, you're hired. No, it didn't. Right. You had to go on Discovery Channel. So can you tell...
It took me 15 years to make it overnight.
So, and then I was reading your, again, your Hollywood other stuff. You've done some other movies as well during this time as well. You were mentioning some of some stuff is more recognizable than others. So you kept busy, which is great. I mean, on other shows, that doesn't happen, right? You're usually stuck, but the way this show works, you can still work, which is good.
And also... It's funny because in show business we as talent have a tendency to be a little demanding. I guess is the best way to describe it. And it's kind of like I learned a great lesson from my mother, My mother never swears, ever.
Okay.
But when she does, she means business. So I never asked for anything. I'm always cool. I'm always like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, no, I don't need green M&Ms in my trailer. I'm good. You don't have the trailer that's the size of my contract? Oh, no, that's all right. I'll use that one. I don't care. I'm very cool that way. Very easy that way. So when I do ask for things, they're like, holy crap, Johnny's asking for something. We better give it to him. So, yeah, so I choose my battles very carefully. And also, they are just a wonderful group of people to work with. And if they can make it work, they will make it work. And don't get me wrong, I've had to, I've had to wake up the family, demo the house, fly out to Los Angeles from Tennessee for a day, do ADR and do pickups for a movie, fly back that night, and then continue building the house the next day.
Wow.
So if they can make it work, they'll make it work. But yeah, it's work. It's work. But you know what? It's show business, and it's 10% talent, 90% Fuller Brush Man.
So
and
yeah.
you know what I mean. So you better believe in your brushes, and it's work. It's show business. It's a business. It's work, work, work. I just happen to be very, very blessed to do for a living what I absolutely love to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one point I want to make is. The show, you do such great things for people. I mean, that's got to be something that motivates you, too, every time. Okay, I'm doing some acting. Oh, but I'm going to go back out here, and it's going to be cold, and I'm going to have to build, and I'm going to really have to have my muscles
right.
will be aching and all this stuff. But when you truly give back, this is what that show's all about.
I've dedicated my life to a life of service. And I love it. I love serving the show. I love serving the families we help because we don't just pick them out of a hat. I mean, they are truly remarkable people in their own right, and we honor that every week. My favorite, everybody asks, Donnie, what's your favorite family out of all the millions you've done? And my answer is, right away, Jones family, Mississippi. Mrs. Jones, the greatest lady in the whole wide world. Mrs. Jones, raised in a community of less than 100,000 people, raised over $500,000 for Katrina relief.
Wow.
She's a nurse. She opened her front room of her house as a wholesale nurse shop for all her other nurse people to come and buy wholesale nursing equipment. She opened her garage as a storage unit for winter coats so everyone in her community, every homeless person in her community would have a winter coat. And with all her extra time, she is very dedicated to the church. And so one day, the reverend of her church called her and said, Mrs. Jones, we need you to sign some paperwork. She goes, okay, I'll do it Sunday, Reverend. He goes, no, I'm in the neighborhood. I'll stop by. And she goes, no, please don't do that. Well, it was too late. He had stopped by. And what he saw floored him. Here she is. She raised over $500,000 in Katrina relief, and she was a victim of Katrina herself.
Wow.
Half of her house was tarped, blue tarps. And they filled the soup pot and the bathtub from a hose through the window. So I'm not even going to go into any details about the toilet not working. And so the reverend took a picture, wrote us a letter, took a picture. We were there 7 weeks. And we demolished the house. We built her a mansion, built her a store for the nurses. We built her a huge facility for the winter coats and a community center. And it was just absolutely wonderful. We moved the bus. She's floored. Oh, and on top of it, she has a single mom. She makes about 30 G's a year, and she has 5 children, all academic and athletic scholars. Brilliant, brilliant, beautiful, beautiful kids. And so we move the bus. She's floored. Everybody's happy. She walks into the house, ignores all the leather furniture, ignores the plasma screen TV, ignores everything, walks over to the kitchen sink, turns on the water, and says, I'll take running water any day.
Oh, wow. And that's what...
And it,
Sorry, John.
No worries, buddy. That is that moment. It's that perfect moment where, you know, we live in a society where we flip out and victimize ourselves because we can't find our car keys. You know what I mean?
It really makes you think, wow, how lucky I am. Even though at the end they get a tremendous house. Wow. I mean, the story's...
They have a tremendous house, but look at the amazing thing she has been able to accomplish in a crappy house. Now look what she can do.
Exactly.
You know, I told her when I said goodbye, I was like, please don't give anything away. She would. She'd give anything away. She's that generous. She's that kind. Yeah.
So I guess, John, that's where I wanted to kind of go at the basis of my show is a lot of times they talk about their charities and foundations. Being involved with Extreme Makeover Home Edition, you pretty much are a foundation and charity, what you do for families. But are you involved in any charity work as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My charity of choice is the Greener Diamond. You go to greenerdiamond.com. Where we raise awareness and funds for boy soldiers in Africa and the awareness of the conflict-free diamonds. And there are conflict-free diamonds out there, not blood diamonds. I've gone to Africa with my charity, and we've raised enough money to irrigate a 100-acre rice field for a village. And it is sustainably run all by ex-boy soldiers in Sierra Leone.
Wow. So last thing I want to talk about, because, again, we're almost running out of time, really interesting conversation, John, and I guess we'll have to tune in very, very soon to the show, because I know that is that what you're promoting right now, would you say, John? What is the big thing? You're out there doing some radio interviews and different things. What's the big thing you're promoting coming up?
Well, I don't know if you know this, buddy, but I hate to drop a bomb on your show, but we got canceled.
Really? I didn't know that.
It's too expensive. This economy, nobody can. Everything used to be donated. Well, nobody can really truly donate in a really tough economy.
Oh, that's terrible.
And so ABC was having it was a struggle, and we all decided that it probably would be best for the show to cancel, and so they canceled it. That doesn't mean that they still don't promote it, because you can watch all the back episodes on ABC.com. You can still visit all our vendors, wonderful vendors that have helped us through the years at ABC.com. We are. That's why we have season 10 in the can. They're all our holiday specials. And I feel really blessed to have been a part of many of them. It's a really great thing. So to answer your question, I'm all the radio interviews and everything. I'm promoting season 10 of Extreme Makeover Home Edition, and I'm also selfishly shamingly self-promoting myself.
So this is it. This is the last one. This holiday, the 10th. What the?
You know what? Though, you know, I never say in this business. If I've learned anything, there are no goodbyes in this business. There's only see you laters, and you know that.
Yes.
And I honestly believe that we will be back for specials. We're not going anywhere.
Especially if the ratings are through the roof, because I've been waiting.
Exactly.
So you think, and why would ABC cancel something so good? You don't. That's what I'm saying, John. When I was not seeing you guys on, I said, "Well, what's going on here?" And then I saw you come back, and I'm like, "Holy cow, they're back!" And why only for holiday episodes? And you heard it first on my show. Why that is? But I'm sure you could Google it. But a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, there's plenty of information out there if you Google, us being canceled. I couldn't believe it. But it was a very sad day. But like I said, there's no goodbyes. You just see you later. So we're not going anywhere. The numbers are huge. The ratings are wonderful. And I would be very surprised. I wouldn't be very surprised when we come back for more specials, because that's... And especially with Hurricane Sandy.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? You know, I mean, those, the people in Jones Beach and everywhere, it's devastating. I don't know if you watched the concert the other night.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
It was just those, and like, I have a buddy of mine who lives in, what was once the Jersey Shore. What is the name of the town he lives in? It's the town next to Asbury Park, and I'm trying to blank. But anyway, he took a picture, and he's standing, and I've been to his house, and he lives about five blocks from the beach. And this is not kidding. I'm not kidding. He took a picture standing on his porch of his home, and he took a picture of a shark swimming in his front yard.
Jeez.
Yeah. There's a freaking shark in his front yard. Yeah. Yeah. It's just absolutely devastating what has happened. And I don't think we're going anywhere.
I don't think so either. Yeah. I think that other stuff.
I don't think we're going anywhere.
If you see the ratings and they go through the roof and ABC says, by the way, goodbye, someone else is going to pick you up. You know that. Some cable station or something, it'll happen.
Okay, well, now let me ask you this.
Okay. Okay. This is what's so fun about interviewing celebrities, that we have those little here's a story. John, I had someone on, the writer from Alien, and I'm starting to talk to him and talk to him and talk to him, and he almost spilled his guts about his next two projects. So, and it does happen when you interview people. They just, yeah, I'm kind of conversational person, and you're like, hey, this just feels like
you're
talking.
It's just like, and it's stream of consciousness, and I just flip, So I did, I just finished a wonderful film called The Contractor with Danny Trujillo. That's going to be on Lifetime. That was fun to do. So I'm just staying busy, you know.
Well, with your name now, it must be easier to go into Hollywood and audition for things because of what's in your resume. I think that always.
Yeah. It's always tough, you know, but. You get in the door easier, that's for sure. People take your phone call.
Yeah,
you know
the right person to call next and things like that. I mean, I'm learning this from just dealing with just interviewing celebrities in Hollywood and just how it works. And, man, there's a job. You have it for a few years, and you know you're going to be out trying to work again.
And that's the thing. This business is crazy. When I was in my 20s, I was on a soap opera. I was on a soap opera, Another World, on NBC, and I was on that for years, and NBC canceled that soap, and I thought, okay, this is it, man, I'm going to be the next De Niro. Yeah, 6 months later, I was a fry cook. you never can tell what's going to happen in this business. Because it's a tough one, but it's a great one. You know, what did the Peace Corps say? It's the toughest job you'll ever love.
So, if you were going to list on your resume, what would you list after Extreme Makeover: Home Edition? What would be your next big break in acting? Would you say that you would say this is something where people remember me?
Wow!
Isn't that a good question?
That's a great question, buddy. And it's I would have to be very personal. It's a film that Tony and Christian Slater and I did called Slipstream. And it's a very bizarre film if you don't know Tony. Basically, when I saw it at Sundance, he said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Tony, I love it." And he goes, "But, you know, because there's these strange flashbacks." He plays a writer, a screenwriter. And there's these strange flashbacks of Picasso and Hitler and Nixon and all these bizarre flashbacks. But if you know him and you know his tremendous body of work, I said, "Tony, all the flashbacks are characters you've played in your life. So this movie is really like a living epitaph of your life.
Yeah.
This is your headstone. And and he gave me a gigantic hug. And he grabbed me, and he's the son of a Welsh shipbuilder, so he's got these hands that like are a big bunch of bananas. And he grabs you. And I'm a big guy, and he takes his hands and wraps them around, envelops my face, and he says, "Kiddo, you're the only one who got it."
So that's great, and, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm very blessed to have been able to hear the word action, and I get to look Anthony Hopkins in the eyes in front of the camera and act with him. I'm very, 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 very fortunate and very lucky. There are, I have many memories that can never be taken away. I've been very blessed with a very wonderful career.
Well, John, it's been amazing talking with you. And when I first got the text message from your publicist, I'm like, oh, okay. All right, yeah, that's great. And then not knowing you're an actor too, isn't that amazing? And then, I'm waiting for the confirmation. You know, I'm doing dishes at home and just saying, okay. I've had some pretty interesting interviews this week. Cool Rock from the Fat Boys I had on. I had Body by Jake on the show this week. I'll have to send you the entire resume, but you're definitely on the resume now, and it's so much fun. I love interviewing
people. Oh, cool, man. Thank you.
So where can we find information on you? I know we're promoting Extreme Makeover Home Edition, but also where else can we find info on you, John?
You can follow me on Twitter at Johnny_EMHE. At Johnny_EMHE, which is Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And you can go to my website, johnlittlefield.net, and johnlittlefield.net, and you can befriend me on Facebook, or befriend me on Facebook, I don't know. we live in a wonderful world where we can, you know, and it's funny because, you know, when I first started as an actor, You know, I had to go to the library to develop characters. Now I had to go to look up encyclopedias to see pictures of the person I'm portraying. I had to listen to music and microfiche of the period and the time. Now it's so much easier to research a character. I can do it in my bedroom on my laptop. It's so amazing. If anybody out there is wanting to learn or to study acting or get into this business, man, you got it easy, kid, because we had to go to the library.
Well, thanks again for calling, John, and we'll stay off. I want to talk to you off air about something real quick, but it was a pleasure talking to you and learning about what you're doing. And again, everyone needs to check out Extreme Makeover Home Edition on Sunday night this week. What time again?
We're on Mondays and Sundays now for the specials. Yeah.
Monday. Okay.
Yeah. Just go to ABC.com and check your local.
All right. Thanks again for calling, John.
Yeah.
Take care.
Hey, thank you so much. And thank all of you for all of your wonderful support throughout the years on the show. We couldn't have done it without you guys. It's truly a wonderful community that we've created. So thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks again for calling. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Education
Bye-bye.
Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network. Remember, my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Well, I am so excited about this, and I wait till I go ahead and tell my wife again, because the Real Housewives series is one thing that my wife is just a huge fan of. But trust me, this is going to go in a direction more of a foundation, but again, I'll talk about the excitement about I'm kind of hooked on certain reality television, especially the Real Housewives. So I want to welcome the program. Mary Amons. Mary, thanks for calling from the Real Housewives of D.C.
Well, thanks for having me, Neil. And you know what? I'm really excited to hear a man actually admitting that he's a fan.
Well, it's one show I can watch with women and not get in trouble with because of my wife's forcing me to watch. So, you know, but I'm excited to talk to you about your foundation. But what I get excited about is looking at your background and also with the Kennedys. There's so many different things. And when we talked off air, it'd be great if you end up doing a monthly segment for me, promote what's going on with the
Real
couple of Housewives of D.C., and then we can kind of go into more about other things. But I want to talk about your foundation today, Labels for Love. Tell me a bit about it.
Well, back in 2006, I was looking for something to do. My kids are getting older now. My youngest child is 14, and my oldest is 26. And at the time, I wanted to do something and continue a legacy that I came from. My dad started a foundation back in 1970 when Coach Vince Lombardi died of cancer. He started the Lombardi Foundation and did a charity golf and tennis tournament. It's been a family legacy that I've grown up with. My dad started the Lombardi Foundation back in 1970 when Coach Lombardi died of cancer. And he raised money to, that actually became the seed money for the Lombardi Cancer Center at Georgetown University. So it was our family project, and I learned a tremendous amount about the importance of giving back. And so I decided that I wanted to do that and teach my kids the same, and do it in a creative way. I'm very fashion oriented, and this town is filled with charity events, and most of them are black tie galas, and a lot of the same people going to these same events. And so I just wanted to kind of create something new and interesting and exciting and artistic that D.C. needs as far as fashion is concerned as well. So I started doing fashion-focused events and raised money for women's and children's causes. And I've supported all kinds of different small, under-the-radar charities here in D.C. And very program-specific monies going, you know, towards, like, redoing a playground for a soup kitchen here. So I'm not just writing big checks to, you know, pay for someone's car allowance. I'm providing specific programs for really very worthy causes, and also giving them some exposure and some marketing assistance, and so I started that, and that's developed into something very fun and sought after here. My events are pretty fabulous, I have to say, and I've engaged all of my kids. When we do something, they're all helping me at some level at some point, and I'm teaching them, you know, the importance of how it's critical for us to give back to our community.
Did you start? Mary, did you start this before or after Real Housewives?
I started this in 2006. We filmed Housewives in 2009, and it really was the catalyst for me deciding to do the show, because I wanted to just get a much broader exposure of my charity work. And, you know, if I did that, I was going to have the opportunity to raise much more money and, you know, provide assistance to bigger causes. And that happened, actually. I partnered up with Fran Drescher's organization, Cancer Schmancer, and we did a big fashion show here in D.C. I had Mark Bauer come down. Fran was here. It was a fabulous, fun evening with Fran. And while we filmed Housewives, I had a fashion show here at the Mayflower Hotel with Lila Rose, and that was really fun and very well received. But yeah, I started the foundation before, and then really the reason I wanted to go on the show was to get my foundation exposed on a higher level.
And so you have some familiarity with fashion then, by the way, by doing the fashion shows?
Yeah, just by hobby, and having worked for my dad. My dad hired me when I was raising my kids when they were small to be the executive director of the foundation. So I had the background of how to run a 501c3, and then I just have the interest in the hobby of bringing some focus to fashion focus here to D.C. because there's such a a misperception of the way people dress and carry themselves here. It's a pretty fashionable city. But because we're a political city, everyone thinks everybody's in blue suits and you know, boring pumps, which is not the case. So the other thing that's occurred as a result of the show, which was very exciting, is I wear this cross, this silver cross, pretty much every day. It's just kind of my signature piece of jewelry that I just love. And it's made by Christoph. And when I went on the show, I started getting a tremendous amount of interest in my cross and wondering where to get it and what it is. So I approached the company, and they have a very small jewelry division. They're pretty much known for their high-end luxury tabletop silver, handmade silver. And they're a French company. And so I got the nerve to go meet with their CEO in New York. And it was, I really had a pretty hard sell because they're like this very high-end luxury brand, and I'm a Real Housewife. And he really didn't know much more of the show than the stuff that's out there about, you know, pulling wigs and flipping tables and all of that. he had some real hesitancy, but then when he heard about what I'm about and the fact that I was pitching him to recreate the Cross and Benefit labels for Love, which they agreed to do and has been hugely successful. So I've been out promoting that, and they've been hosting parties for me in their stores and their boutiques around the country to introduce the Cross in those communities. So it's been great. And it's you can get the Cross on my website, which is labelsforlove.org, and there's a link to the Christoph purchase page. And it's $125, very reasonable price point. It's 100% 925 solid sterling silver. It comes on a black cord, which is adjustable, so you tie it at any length that you like to do. And it's a great gift. So I'm doing a little pitch here, Neil.
That's
great gift for the holidays, Mother's Day. And it's a piece of, it's really a very artistic cross. It's really a piece of art that hangs on your neck. So it doesn't have to have a religious meaning. It can be just a cool piece of silver.
Well, being an education show, even though this is the Spotlight show, we're kind of go education related with fashion. Involving your kids, that's fantastic. I'm going to do the same thing with my children when they get older. I have four children, three under the age of seven, yes. And
wow.
Well, I'm a busy guy, and my wife's very, very busy. That basically, to have them involved in this, that's such a great experience for them.
Yes, well, it truly is something that comes from my own upbringing, and you know, it ended up being such a fun family activity to help organize this event, and we got to know so many different people, and it was very politically driven. This golf tournament that my dad really sort of focused on the lobbyists and the politicians. So I mean, I had such incredible exposure. My whole entire life dealing with people and helping and getting to know congressmen and senators and lobbyists and all kinds of important people. And I want my kids to experience the same about what, you know, when you come together and you work together to do something for your community and for good, it opens up so many doors for your, I mean, there's so much benefit to get from giving, you know, and that's one of the things that my dad just really instilled in our family is that you get back so much more than you're giving. And it just feels good too. So
what's your goal?
My kids are all very, very philanthropically minded as a result. So that I'm blessed to be able to say that.
That's fantastic. This is one thing that the show, we're so excited about doing a celebrity segment really about foundations and charities, is that celebrities never get the opportunity to talk about them. I'm sure every time you're doing is gossip, especially when the show is going on. And now probably when it comes back, they'll be asking about, so what happened with this person, instead of your passion, which, again, why you did the show. One of the reasons was for Labels for Love. What is the ultimate goal you want for this? Do you want this to go global, by the way?
I would love to. The thing is that I am pretty much domestically oriented, and it's specific to women's and children's causes, and also specific to programs. So I'm just excited to support some other organizations that I've. And one of the things that I was going to mention is that an organization that I'm supporting right now was brought about my attention. It was came to my attention by being on the show, and this woman who runs this foundation that provides funding and research and support for families with girls with Rett syndrome. I had no idea what Rett syndrome was. She reached out to me because she wanted me to be the keynote speaker for an event that she was bringing to D.C. And I just was so moved by her story and just educated by this condition that develops in girls that I had no idea existed, and it's really an incredible thing. What happens is a little girl will develop normally until she's about one, and then on her first birthday, around that time, she starts to regress. and you know, all of these girls that, and it's pretty primarily happening in girls because it's a chromosomal defect. And what happens is they lose all function except their brains are still developing normally. So they can't feed themselves, they can't really speak, and there are, of course, you know, all different levels of this condition. Because, you know, there are some girls that need 100% full-time care, and then others that can communicate a little bit, they may have more like an autistic symptom to it. But anyway, the thing that I love about this charity, and it all came about because of my exposure in television, is that they're actually going to be able, they're very close in the research process, they're very close to being able to reverse this condition.
Fantastic.
I mean, it's like gives you chills to hear the stories about what's going to happen. And really, this woman that approached me, she has a daughter with Rett syndrome, and she was telling me stories about how, and she has two other kids that are normal. She would take her little girl and sit her next to her on the kitchen counter while she was making Christmas cookies because she can watch and understand and learn how to make Christmas cookies. She can't participate. And she would literally, like, take her hands and put it in the dough and, you know, like, walk her through making Christmas cookies. But there's going to be a time where she's going to be able to have this whole thing reversed and her body is going to start responding and she's going to be able to function again and talk.
Wow.
I mean, it's amazing. It's the most exciting thing I've heard in a long time in medical research.
That's
the foundation that I'm supporting right now with the Labels for Love fundraising effort.
So what we need to do, Mary, is when there's another project, get one of the experts on to talk about it with you on the line for more of the education show to educate people more about this. So that's why I'm so excited about promoting whatever
Definitely.
We can do with the different things. I think that what I'm seeing is this passion of yours is, again, to run a nonprofit, but do it to your very best. It's like, you know, and I'm not going to do this half. Oh, I'm just doing this because really my goal is just to be this superstar, you know, that goes and moves on. But you said the whole word about, you know, domestic for wives, things like that. It's, you sound like such a fantastic person, especially with your five children. And I could speak to that with four. I'd like to have five, but I don't know. My wife right now, she's pulling her hair out with three under. But it's such an important thing.
What's another one, Neil? Come
so speaking of housewives, you know, I had to do this at the end of this. So what's going on with DC? Give us an update. What's happening there?
Well, unfortunately, Bravo decided that our show was not worthy of a second season, for not really clear specific reasons. We can pretty much guess why, because of the White House pressures that were on our show that kind of hijacked the whole premise of the show. But they didn't pick us up, and there was talks over the summer that they were going to bring us back for a full-on reunion show. But that didn't materialize. And now they're airing the show. It's very interesting what they're doing. They're airing the show about every 4 weeks here in the States on a marathon. And now they're airing the show. It's presently premiering right now in the UK and in Ireland.
Oh, wow.
So it's really interesting to see how they're keeping us in the loop. They're keeping us, you know, they're keeping us. But we're not current. That's the only thing.
So I'm going to have to tweet. I'm going to tweet Bravo to say they got to bring it back. I'll start doing that.
Yeah, we have an enormous fan base that is really upset that they haven't brought us back, and that they're just feeding the fans with, you know, the same old show over and over and over. And they really do love us. There's a huge following that we have, and so it's going to be interesting. We'll see. I mean, the more chatter and the more buzz. Could possibly bring us back. We'll see. I don't know.
Well, Mary, I'll keep tweeting it. I'll get my Twitter followers to get on it and start saying we need to get you back because, again, you're very, very real, and that's the important thing. And I forgot all about that. Now you remind me about the Real Housewives of D.C. It was the crashers. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So we have so many different topics to talk about. You were so amazing, and thanks for taking the time. But where can we find more information on you? And give us your Twitter, Facebook, whatever you have in your websites.
I have a fan page on Facebook, just Mary Ammons. I have a Twitter, which is @MaryAmmons, and I'm always looking for fun things to talk about and share. And you can find my cross on my website, alabledforlove.org. Again, it's a very, very interesting gift to give somebody like Christmas time or the holidays. And that's it. And I'm going to be writing a book, a lifestyle book soon. And so I'm working with some people on that and working on a career in voiceover, radio. I might have my own radio show. You can come online.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. I'm going to remember that. And you're going to have to say I have to come on. And I have a strange background as well. If you end up becoming a radio person, I was a former professional wrestler, Mary. So I'm 6 foot 10. Yeah, I'm 6 foot 10. So I'm going to follow you on Twitter
and
Twitter. And then you have to check all those different things and stuff like that. But thanks again for taking
it. The other thing is, my grandfather was one of the pioneers of radio and television. His name was Arthur Godfrey. And he died when I was about 18, so I had a really good, solid relationship with him. And I told him when I was about 8 years old that I wanted to be an actress. And he almost choked on his food, saying, "No, don't ever consider getting into the entertainment business. It's so filled with rejection and hard work, and it's so hard to make it." And I said, But Papa, this is what I want to do. I know this is why I've been put on this earth. So I'm following his legacy as well. Going to be pursuing some things in voiceover and radio. So we'll see.
Well, fantastic, Mary. Thanks again for calling the program. And we'll definitely be in touch. And I'll talk to your agent to make sure we get you on next month, okay?
Wonderful. I did want to make it clear that the organization that I'm supporting, I don't think I said the name of it. It's called GirlPowerToCure.org. And it's the Rett Syndrome Foundation.
We might have an expert in you on the line to talk about the organization next month if there's another event to promote or something like that. So I'll definitely
would
reach
love
out.
Love to.
Okay.
Count on me. I'd love to be a regular.
All right. Take care. You're fantastic.
Great.
Okay. See ya.
Thank you, Neil.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
You listen to Toll Education Spotlight Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Spotlight Show on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. I am just absolutely excited now. And my man, Sean XLG, set us up with one of our biggest guests yet on the network. I mean, I keep lining up the top celebrities this week and every week, but I guess he's going to go to one of the top of the list because I'm such a huge fan. So I'm going to let Sean XLG introduce our guest.
Yep, this is Sean XLG coming to you live, funky fresh in the flesh, like we used to say back in the day. And we have a special guest on the show, Kool Rock. Kool Rock Ski at the legendary Fat Boy on the show with us today.
Cool, thanks again for calling the program. How are you?
Oh, it's no problem, man. I'm good. Everything's good.
Everything's good. Well, it's an honor that you're on the show, but what we do on this show, especially when we bring Sean in, because Sean is the professor of rap and hip hop, is kind of learn more about the story, learn about how Kool Rock and the Fat Boys developed. So tell me a bit about the story of how you guys made it.
How we came together as a group?
Yeah, absolutely.
Rapping on the street corners. Our plan in life was to become professional football players. We played football day and night. You know, we pretty much just eat, sleep the game of football. But that didn't pan out too well. So, like they say, everybody has a purpose in life, and our purpose was to rap and make music. I met Marky D first when he moved on the block. I was already on the block in East New York, Brooklyn. That's where we all grew up at. And then Buff came along when I was in my mid-teens, I think like 13 or 14, and I met him, and he just started doing these percussions from his mouth that sounded like a drum set. And one thing led to another. I just started reciting rhymes and writing down rhymes, and he would just do the beatbox, and I would rap. So we formed a rap group, and pretty much it was five of us at first, but the other three guys would never come to practice, and so it was just left with us three. And we just formed the Disco 3. We entered a contest, the Rap and Dance, the 10-Pen Upper Rap and Dance Contest. And out of 700 rappers, we came in first place. First place prize was a recording contract, just like you see in the movie Crush Groove. And we won that contract, and pretty much, you know, the rest was history.
Wow. I mean, absolutely. I guess it just happens that you went into a different career than you expected at first. You guys wanted to be football players and then said, hey, let's move into something that we really have talent. And and I'm going to ask the professor now. Professor Sean, tell me specifically enough the whole situation where they got some of the ideas of the beatboxing. Give us that, and then I'm going to ask Cool how it kind of developed. But what, from your historical background, the whole beat and stuff, doing beatboxing?
Yeah. The origin of the beatbox, from the general perspective, is that Dougie Fresh originated the human beatbox. However, there's some discrepancies with that story of Dougie Fresh inventing the human beatbox. Number one, you have Buff, the human beatbox with the Fat Boys, who was also doing the human beatbox at the early years, and people really can't put a finger on who actually did it first. And then you had a member of the Force MDs, who were originally called the Force MCs, and they had a group member that was also doing the human beatbox as well. So it's kind of hard putting a finger on who did it first, and it all depends on who you ask. But I think from a historical standpoint, I would have to say that all three probably originated the human beatbox organically on their own individually.
So now, Cool, tell me specifically enough, I guess, how you guys figured out about trying the beatbox. Cool?
Hello?
Okay, continue. I'll edit that out. Tell us how you originated the beatbox, how you guys came up with that idea, and that's really what made you what you are in part of the gimmick. Tell me.
We incorporated that into our lives. Sometimes we couldn't use the DJ equipment in Buff's house because his mother was upstairs and she didn't want to hear that noise at certain times of the night. So we had to incorporate. We would get like, we wanted to just rap to like maybe, you know, we were still going to school at this point. So we were just rapping. We weren't rapping on the street corner. We were practicing even in Mark's basement or my basement. And we wasn't doing the two turntables and the microphones every 7 days a week, so we had to use Buff. The thing about Dougie Fresh and Buff, we lived in Brooklyn, and Dougie Fresh lived in Harlem, so we didn't know about Dougie Fresh didn't know about us. I really don't know who came with it first, because as far as I'm concerned, Buff came up with it first, because that's who I knew. I never heard of Dougie Fresh, because I lived in a different borough. But incorporating Buff into our raps was huge because nobody was really doing it at that point. And if Dougie was doing it, like I said, we never heard of him. So when we went to join the contest, it was something totally different because they were like, wow, these guys are rapping. And they don't need, because there was a track for everybody to rap to at that contest. We told the players, we don't want the track. We want to do it a cappella with Buff and K-pop. And they stood up in their seats because they wanted to see it. So it was something different. So that's how we nailed it and got to the semifinals.
So that what's wild about it, and then we're going to talk about, I guess, the big break, which we talked about on the show before, but I guess I want Sean to set the stage, and you tell us in your own words, but just to give you an idea, Cool Rock, a lot of people I don't get, like, really, really excited. I interview a lot of celebrities, but because I remember when I was a kid, and one of my first rap albums I bought, and I remember how much I was into the Fat Boys, especially with the beatboxing. I mean, I could even remember specifically enough listening to the record, what house I was in and everything when I first got exposed to it and watching you guys on TV. So this is just an absolute honor to be on the show with you. But Sean, tell us now, and we kind of talked about this before in touching base, once they got in this context, how did it happen that they got discovered and then, bam, before you know it? And remember, I remember you talking about the Disco 3. So lead us into, they weren't called the Fat Boys at first. Go ahead.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Sean. Okay. Tell us about that. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So once the Disco 3 entered the contest at the Disco Fever, you had Sal, who was the manager of Disco Fever. You also had Curtis Blow, who was basically working in partnership with Sal at the Disco Fever at the time when they were hosting the MC contest that the Fat Boys had entered. Once the Fat Boys won the contest, they actually made their first record, which was the release of the song Fat Boys along with Stick'Em. And that was actually done under the name of the Disco Three. And then after that song became such a huge hit, they came up with the idea to talk with the group about changing their names from the Disco 3 to the Fat Boys, and the rest is the music history. They were one of the first rap groups to record a gold album, also one of the first to go multi-platinum as well. And, of course, that was the first of many, many mega hits that the group put out, from Jailhouse, Rap, Stick'Em, Fat Boys, Can You Feel It, all from their first album. And then, of course, all the other string of mega hits followed years later, making them one of the most successful hip-hop acts in history, actually.
Cool. Were you shocked at this, how quickly it just got out there after the contest? So kind of lead us into your experience of how you made it. Like, you went through this contest, you had the beatboxing. When did you know you were going to be the next big thing?
At the end of the year, this radio station that was really popular in New York, 98.7, they had a rundown of the most popular songs for that year. And we came in second, only to Prince, Purple Rain. And right there, I knew we were going to be very successful with what we were doing. Other than that, it was just work. It was just work. When you're working so hard like that to obtain success, you don't look back on what you're doing. Because if you look back, then you're going to get complacent
exactly.
What you're doing. You're going to start looking at your work, and you're going to get lazy. But we were working so hard. By the time we looked back, you know, we were selling so many records. We were doing so many tours. We were getting invited on so many tours that we had to turn down a bunch of tours because we were so popular. It was like the second coming of the Beatles, only in a hip-hop form. And, you know, everybody wanted us. Everybody wanted a piece of us. And it never went to our heads. That's one thing about it. We came from humble backgrounds. So it never, ever got to the point where we were just started turning things down and just started telling people, you can't come around us. We were just guys from the block. We were going back to our old neighborhood and hanging out. That's how oblivious we was to what was going on around us, naive to what was going on around us. We were still hanging in the streets.
Oh, wow.
You know, and people were telling us, you know, you guys can't hang around here anymore. Y'all, you know, what are you doing around here? This is a dangerous neighborhood now. And we're like, nah, we from the hood. You know, we from the block. We ain't got time to listen to that. You know us. And then after a while, our manager started telling us, you know, you can't do what you did before because you're not that person no more. You know, you guys have a huge name right now. And that's when we knew, you know, we were, I mean, I hate to say the word, but that's how we knew. That's how I started to think that we were celebrities.
Yes.
Because we were being treated so much different. You know, we walk into the balls and things are pretty much just handed to us. You know, everything was pretty much just given to us. You know, you go to a nightclub, you couldn't get in from 2 years ago. Now, you know, you're on the VIP all of a sudden, you know. So that's the price of being a celebrity. Everything is being thrown at you.
So here's a question, Cole, and then I'll go back to Sean. Again, for 14 to 15 minutes, not enough time. We'll have to bring you back again. This is exciting. Now our international audience as well gets the opportunity to learn more about Cool Rock. But now tell me specifically enough the whole fact of when you guys started making a lot of money and then you kind of had to change your style. Did you get the big houses and stuff once the paychecks kept coming in?
Oh, we were young, so of course you're going to go out there and buy what you want to buy because it's not like nobody's telling you not to buy this, but you're getting a little money on the side as well as the paychecks that your mother and your father can see and they want to put away for you. But you're getting some cash money on the side as well. You're getting like maybe 10 or 15% from some other advance from a record company that they don't know. So you're taking that money, you're going out and buy gold chains and buy rims for your cars. We didn't do things extravagant because we were pretty much put on a budget. So we wasn't going out there buying big crazy things and going crazy with money. Like I said, we came from humble backgrounds, so we took care of family first. That's the thing about it. Family comes first. And we knew where we came from. And so it wasn't like we were getting the big head and saying, hey, you know, I want a king's robe with the king crown on it. and everybody's supposed to carry the Clintons carry the robe while I'm walking. It can get to that kind of craziness. But it was just a thing.